We're holding on Pesach, I'm going to add, let's try the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, here we've been talking about in the previous Mishnah about Kli Shoris. We said that Kli Shoris is Mekadosh as a Rory Lord. It's Mekadosh whatever was suitable to be placed in that Kli Shoris, meaning we said, in other words, if you have something, even if you have something that's possible, and you put it in a Kli Shoris, then to a certain extent, it has a Kedusha to it. We had Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan about that in yesterday's Gemara. So now the Mishnah continues. Klei halach mekadshin es halach. The kalim for liquids that are in the Bais Hamikdash are mekadish liquids. Namely, Rashi says, you have bowls and basins for blood and wine and oil. So you put water, wine, or oil in those kalim, then now they have kedushas. They have kedushas aguf. Well, midas yavish mekadshis es yavish. The measures for dry things are mekadish dry things. For example, flour. Rashi points out that, first of all, the Gemara tells us in Menachos that there were measures in the Bais Hamikdash for the different things that were needed. In particular, they had an Isoren measure and a half Isoren measure. Those were the two ones that they had for measuring solids. Rashi points out that the reason why the Mishnah uses the word clay for the liquids and midis for the dry ones, Rashi says, is because the fact is, for example, you can put a mincha in a mizrach. So the mizrach can do double duty. It can be used for catching the blood of the korban. It can also be used for placing a mincha. As opposed to these two things, the isarin and the half isarin, and the half isarin are reserved exclusively for use with dry things, with flour. Tosfos argues on that and points out there are other kalim that are used exclusively with dry things. Tosfos gives a different explanation. The ones for dry ones are called mida in the sense that with dry things, you can heap them up above the rim of the container. The Gemara mentions in some places that if the container is appropriately sized, you can get into that heap. You can get as much as half of what the keli itself would hold. So with a dry measure keli, you can measure it however you want. You can do it flat, you can do it a little bit of heaping, you can do it very heaping. As opposed to liquids, you really can't do that. Every liquid has its own surface tension, and therefore you're going to have the how much it can belly over the rim of it. You know, like when you pour a cup for Kiddush and the wine goes a little bit over the rim because of surface tension, but not very much. And each time it's going to be always consistent for a given liquid, so we don't call them mida. So therefore we just call it keli. Shit, we'll go back to this, phrases it somewhat differently. It brings from Tosfos that the verdict is exactly that, that when it comes to dry things, you can always have, there can be a different amount that you heap up each time, whereas the liquids not so. In addition, Shittim Kovetzis also points out, you have kalim in the Bais Hamikdash, such as bowls for liquids that are not measuring containers at all. For example, bowls for example, basins for the blood, you're not measuring anything in them. So they can't be really called mida, as opposed to the ones for dry measure, for dry, are basically meant to measure it. So the Mishnah continues, Ein kli alach mekadosh as a yavish. The kalim for liquids are not mekadosh dry things. So if you were to take a mincha, for example, and put it in a kalim for liquids, or we'll see in the Gemara specifically what type of kalim, then it doesn't become holy. The lo yavish mekadosh as a lach, and vice versa, if you were to put, let's say, wine into a container that's meant to measure flour, then it wouldn't become holy. So then it would just have the same din as before. It belongs to the Bais Hamikdash. It has Kedushas Damim, but it doesn't have Kedushas Aguf in the sense that, for example, if it becomes Tomei, then you can't be Poided, etc. Continues the Mishnah. Klei HaKodesh Shemnikvu. What about if the Kalim get a hole in them? So it depends. Im Oisin Ben Main Malacht, I'm sure you're Oisin Ben Shleimim. If the Kalim can still serve the same function as it did when it was whole, and before we talk about that, may not mean even, let's say, for example, with the Isorin measure, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to still be able to hold a full Isorin, but let's say it can still hold a half Isorin, then that would still be considered that it's still Oisin Main Malacht, that it's still doing a semblance of what it used to be. So if they're able to serve the same function as they had when they were whole, mekadshin, then they make the dry thing liquid, as the case may be, that you put in them holy, the imlav in mekadshin. If not, then not. If they're not even functional to that extent, then they're not mekadsh anymore. What we do with ones that have holes, we'll see in the Gemara. The chulan in mekadshin el b'chodesh. All of them are mekadesh, whatever you put in them, only inside the kodesh, only in the azara. So if you were to take one of these kalim outside the azara and put flour or wine or whatever in it, nothing happens. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Omer Shmuel, First of all, Lashanu Elam Midos. This that we're talking about, that you have this distinction saying that kalim for liquids cannot be makadish dry, cannot be makadish dry things and vice versa, that refers only to the measuring cups. Al mizrokis makadishin. But when it comes to the mizrokis, when it comes to the basins, even though basically they are meant for liquids because they're meant for catching the blood of the korban, nevertheless, they can also equally well be used for dry things, such as flour, and therefore makadishin, and therefore they would be makadish the flour they place in them. Shenema, as we find by the korbanos or nesiyim, shneim milayim stelos. The pesukim can describe over there for you for every nasa 12 times. That they had karas kesef achas and mizrok efad kesef, where mizrok is a basin that they're going to use for catching the blood of the korbanos, and the pasuk describes both of them, the bowl and the mizrok, are both full of solas, of flour for a korban. So now what's flour doing in a mizrok? So that shows that the mizrok can do double duty, both for liquids and for solids. Okay. However, Amaleh of Achmi Difti, the Ravina, Mincha Lachai. But Rav Achmi Difti says to Ravina, what kind of a proof is that? The Mincha is mixed with oil, so it's moist. Mainly, you were talking about that the Nisim just brought dry flour as a korban. Okay, then you'd have a proof from that buzzer. But it's not. It's talking about a Mincha, which is liquid. Amaleh, so Ravina answers, true, but shmuel din can still be needed for the dry parts of it. When you mix a mincha with flour, inevitably you don't mix it completely. You sometimes have some flour that ended up, that remained dry and didn't get thoroughly mixed with the oil. We'll learn more about that in Menachos in a few weeks, guys. So therefore, so that part, that how would that become kodesh in the mizrach? The answer is that the mizrach can do double duty. Another answer, you could say mincha lagamidam ki yavish dami. You know what? When you consider the consistency of a mincha, yes, it has oil in it, but it's mainly flour, and then you compare that with the consistency of blood, relative to that, a mincha can be considered something dry. It's true, it does have moisture in it, but it's not nearly as liquidy as blood. So nevertheless, we can still say that we learn from that that the mizrach is able to be mechadish something even completely dry. Okay? Another din in this connection, Amashmul, clay shardis and mechadishin el shleimin. The clay shardis are mechadish only when they're whole, not when they're broken or have a hole in them. So we said in the Mishnah, if they have a hole and they're still able to function to a certain extent, like they did, then fine, but we're saying that if not, then not. In mechadishin el malayin, they're also only mechadish when they're full, meaning you have, let's say, any certain measure. It has to have the actual shear. When we say full, it means as full as it needs to be for the purpose. So Rashi describes, in other words, for example, that a regular mincha consists of one isarin of flour. So now, if the keli has less than an isarin in it, then it's not mekadesh, because less than an isarin is not a valid mincha. Similarly, for example, if it's minchas nesachim, so you have the different amounts, 3 asroinim for a bull, 2 asroinim for a ram, etc. So if you have less than that in the keli, then it's not mekadesh. Ein mekadesh in elam mitoychon. Another din is that they're mekadesh. As far as this ein mekadesh in elam aleihin, by the way, there's an interesting side thing that Evan brings in a letter and in the back. Look what the Sichas Chelek Lamed, a couple of letters discussing about various aspects of myths of the Nes Chanukah. Which, we're coming up to Hanukkah in a couple of days, so it's as man drama to talk about. We know that there's a famous question of Beis Yosef, why we light the menorah for 8 days, why not 7? They had 1 day's worth of oil, and there's an enormous number of answers that are given to it. One of the well-known answers is that they divided up the 1 day's supply of oil, and each day they would put only 1/8 of the oil into the cups of the menorah, and nevertheless it still burnt for the full amount of time that it's supposed to, and that was the nest. So according to that, there was a nest every single day. So they never discusses in one of these letters, would that work, actually, based on what we're saying over here? In Makadishin El Malayin, that would mean you'd have to put in the full amount of oil into each cup of the menorah in order to be yotze the mitzvah. Then the Rebbe writes in the next letter that says, you know what, I realized, actually, that no, what's Makadish, the oil for the menorah, anyway, is not pouring it into the menorah itself. And Gemara and Menachos tells us they had a half-log measuring cup in the Bis Mikdash, and they would use that to measure out the oil for each lamp of the menorah, and that's what's Makadish, the oil. So fine, that one they poured in the full half load. a full half lug for oils, for lamps, 3.5 lugim altogether is how much the container held. The fact that in the Minota they put less, so fine, there's other reasons you can argue against that explanation, and there's a number of sifras that whatever talks about various angles on what exactly the mitzvah was, what exactly the nest was, but as far as that particular objection, that filling up the cups only 1/8 wouldn't be yotze, that in fact is not so. Anyway, so ein mekadesh on the malayim, ein mekadesh on the mitzvah. Another din is the mekadesh only from the inside. So meaning, in other words, that only if you put what you put inside them. So not for example what you have on the outside. Not for example what dribbles down on the outside of the container. But amilah, so that's what Shmuel is saying. It has to be malayin, it has to be shlenim, the kebi itself is whole, malayin full of the amount that's supposed to be in there, mitochon only from the inside. But amilah, others say, ein mekadshin ela shlenim umalayim umibifnim. Others have a different version that Shmuel had said that they have to be full, and they have to be bifnim. Bifnim would be, it actually explains, inside the azara. Although Tosfos argues that because the Mishnah had said Bakhoidesh, so why according to this version would Shmuel be saying Bifnim instead to mean inside the Azara? So rather Tosfos wins, and Rabbeinu Chaim says Bifnim does mean inside the cave, meaning as opposed to, for example, let's say you carved out an area outside the keli, or let's say, like, for example, you have like nowadays you have kiddush cups with stems where sometimes the base is hollow and you could turn the cup over and put something in there. That wouldn't be considered, that's not bifnim, because that's not in the part of the keli that's meant to hold anything, and therefore nothing, and therefore that's not the kaddish. So the Gemara says my binayu. What is the difference between these two versions of what Shmuel is saying? And the answer is ikabenau birutzei midas. The argument between them would be about the overheaped measures. Mainly, again, when you're measuring out flour, for example, you can pour flour into the keli and you can continue going past the rim. You can make a heap on top. Is that part miskadesh or not? So if you say ein mekadshin ela mitochon the first version, then it would mean that only up to the rim is niskadish. What's in that heap above that would not be niskadish. As opposed to if you say bifnim, then that's fine. It is bifnim, at least according to Rashi's definition of bifnim, and therefore it is in fact mekadish. So that would be the difference. And in fact, Rashi points out there is a machloikas on that point in Menachas, on that very point, whether in fact when you heap up the measure, whether that's niskadish as well. So b'masnisaton in a brayser we learn yet another version. In mekadshin ela shleimim umalein umitochon umibifnim. In a brayser it mentions all four. The keli itself has to be whole. It has to be full of the proper amount. It has to be the material that you bring mekadish is inside the keli, and it has to be inside the azara. Again, according to Tosfos, bifnim over here would mean that it can't be for example that you invert the keli and put it inside the base of the keli or something. So mitochon would mean inside the keli as opposed to what dribbles down the outside, and bifnim would be inside the actual keli itself as opposed to, for example, the upside down base. Gemara does mention in Menachas, by the way, that actually there's a difference in that regard with liquids. Even when liquids dribble down on the outside of the container, they are niskadish to a certain extent as well. Gemara discusses over there that the clay shardis for liquids were anointed with Shemen HaMishchan, both the inside and the outside, and that makes it now that the outside has a degree of Kedusha as well, and therefore even if the keli overflows, then still that overflow is still niskadish. Now, one of the things we said, one of the criteria we said in all the different versions of what Shmuel said and what the Brai said, is that they have to be Malayim, they have to be full. So, Amar of Asi, Amar of Yechanan, Lo Yishanu Ela She'in Daitya L'Hoisif. When we're saying that it's not Mekadosh, unless the Keli is full, that would only be if he doesn't plan to add afterwards. So he put in, let's say, a half Yisaron of flour, and he plans to leave it that way. So it's not Mekadosh, because a half Yisaron is not a valid mitzvah. But if he does plan to add more, so right now he poured in because right now this is what he had, and in a couple of minutes he's going to get another half Yisaron and add the rest. Then fine, Rishin Kodesh, whatever you put in, gradually becomes Kodesh. So that a half Yisorin will become Kodesh, and later on when he gets the other half of Yisorin, the other half of Yisorin, the rest of it will be Kodesh as well. Tani Nami Hochi, in fact, we learn like that in Ebraisa. Malayim, that when the Pasuk says before about the Korbanos of the Nesiim, that the Ka'ara and the Mizrach were Shneim Malayim Soilus, they were both full of flour, the word Malayim ain't Malayim, ala Shleimim. The word Malayim means that they have to be whole, so it has to be whole Esroinim, not fractions. But Amr Rabbi Yosi Emesai, but Rabbi Yosi says, when is that? Because Manshein Daita Lahoisif, when he's not planning to add anything, then it's not Makadish unless it's whole. I will Daita Lahoisif, but he plans to add Rishin, Rishin Kodesh, then as he keeps on adding, it becomes Kodesh, which is exactly what Rabbi Yosi was saying. We said in the Mishnah, Ein Klei Alach Makadish, although we said that a Keli that's meant for liquids is not Makadish dry things and vice versa. However, Omer Ravi, Tamer Abasu, Ein Makadishin Likrav. What that means is that if the wrong thing is placed in there, it's not Makadishin as far as offering it on the Mizbeah. So you take a Keli that's reserved for liquids. Now, before we mentioned, for example, that there's two dry measures in the Bis Mikdash. They had an Isorin and a half Isorin. The Mishnah tells us in Menachos that they had a bunch of liquid measures as well. They had a hin, which they had originally used to measure out the oil for the Shemen Amishka. They had a half hin and a third hin and a quarter hin, because those are the different amounts of wine and oil that you need for the Nesachim, and so on and so forth. So now what we're saying is, if you were to take, for example, the hin measure, and put flour in it, it wouldn't be Kodesh. That means that Ravi, Tamer Ravasi, Ein Mekadesh and Likrav, they're not Mekodesh as far as that you can offer that flour on the Mizbeah. You have to put it in the right kind of Klishas. Av Mekadesh and Liposel, but they are Mekadesh insofar as now it becomes Posel. Namely, for example, if now, after it was placed in the Klishas, it were to be taken out of the Azara, or were to be tame or whatever, then Tavur Yom touches it, for example, then it would become possible. Because to that extent, the Klishoris is Mekadesh. Tosfos actually earlier in the Sefer points out that it doesn't become possible by being taken out of the Azara unless an Avoida was done with it already. So if, for example, you have a Mincha, let's say, it's supposed to stay in the Azara. If you took the Koimitz out of the Mincha, and then you took the Koimitz or the rest of the Mincha out of the Azara, then it would become possible. But if you just took the Mincha out of the Azara before, when it was in a Kli Shoris, but before you took the Koimitz, then Tosfos learns that it wouldn't yet become possible. So according to them, then fine, we're not talking about you're taking it out of the Azara, we're talking about one of the other Psulim, such as a Tavur Yom touches it. To that extent, it's already effective that will happen, that a Tavur Yom will passel it, even though it's in the wrong kind of painting. So, the Gemara says, Ikud Amasi Laha. Now, this statement of Rav, or some say Amasi, there are some who learn that refers to a different Braisa. So first, actually, you have on the side of it here, you have Shittim Kubetzis, brings a different Gersa, Ika Demastinla Sefer Demastinisin, that there are some who learn Rav and Rav Asi's statement as referring to the Sefer of our Mishnah, that we said that the Holon Ein Mekadesh and Elabar Kodesh, that all of them are Mekadesh only if they're in the Kodesh, only in the Azara, and according to that, then Rav or Rav Asi would say, Ein Mekadesh and Likrav are Mekadesh and Liposel, that it means that they're Mekadesh, that even outside the Azara, they are Mekadesh in the sense that now, whatever is in that Keli will become Posel. If a Tavur Yom touches it, for example, but not that you can be Makar with it, because to be Makar with, you need to have it in the proper kind of Klishonis. So the Gemara continues, Ika Demasi La'aha. Some learn that the statement about the clay shortis being Mekadesh, Likrav, but not Likrav, some refer it to the following braisa. Ein mevin menachos on a sochem or minchas behem or vikorim min a meduma. You're not allowed to bring menachos on a sochem or a mincha that's brought together with an animal. Menachos would be an individual mincha. Nesachim would be, we learned earlier, and we'll learn again in Menachos, that's the shem, that, for example, a person can voluntarily donate Nesachim by themselves as a korban. Minchas behema would be when it comes together with an animal korban. So you can't do those, or bikorim, none of those can be brought min ha-meduma, from meduma. Now, meduma usually in Shas usually means cholin mixed with truma, where you don't have enough cholin to be mevatel the truma. Rashi explains that's what it means over here. Now, Why should that be? It's perfectly mutter for Koyanim. Nevertheless, it actually says, because it has to be something that's mutter for the entire Jewish people. Well, the Pasuk in Yechezkel says about the Korbanos, Mimashke Yisrael, from the drinks of the Jewish people. And from that we learn that anything that's brought as a Korban has to be kosher for Jews to eat. And Rashi is learning that means it has to be kosher not only for Koyanim, but for all Jews. Tosfos disagrees with that. Rabbeinu Chaim and Tosfos says that no, the fact is, if it's mutter to Koyanim, why should that not be considered Mimashke Yisrael? He brings from a relevant Gemara in Chagitha. So rather, the explanation is that it means that here Meduma means a little different than it usually does. Here it means that it's mixed with Orla or Kalaya Kedem. The Braise is going to go on to say, if we can't bring from Orla and Kalaya Kedem themselves, so now we've been talking about not only you can't bring from Orla and Kalaya Kedem themselves, but it means even if those are mixed in with something else and not bottle, then you still can't, you still can't bring them as a carbon. So an interesting point is that how would you have Bikurim be Meduma? The Chofetz Chaim points out in a sefer on this Masechta L'Kutei Halachos that Bikurim, you're supposed to designate them when they're attached to the ground. When you're still seeing the fruit grow on the tree and you see this one is going to ripen early, then you mark it as Bikurim. So how are you going to have Meduma when it comes to Bikurim? Whether, however you define Meduma, whether like Rashi or like Tosfos, either way, how are you going to have that mixture like that? So, but the other, you could say maybe you didn't designate Bikurim when they were attached and you designate them afterwards, but still. But he says maybe the word Bikurim belongs afterwards. Maybe the Braisa is supposed to be saying that you're not allowed to bring Menachos Mesachim and Minchas Behema from Meduma. And then the Braisa would continue that you can't bring them from Orla or Kalayakadam. And in addition, you also can't bring them from Bikurim. You can't, for example, I designated wheat. You bring Bikurim only from the Shivas Aminim, wheat being one of them. So let's say you were to say, I have wheat from my Bikurim. Let me instead turn that into flour, and I'll bring that as a mincha. You can't do that. So then this Chofetz Chaim says maybe that's how the Braisa is supposed to be phrased. And in fact, the Rambam brings that halacha, so then maybe he gets that from here. The Braise continues, the Ein Sarach Lomim Orla V'Kalayakerem. Needless to say, you cannot bring Menachos or Nesachim or any of these things from Orla or Kalayakerem, because those are also even to Yisrael. No, those are also to everybody. They're also Bahana, even. And again, they're not Mimashke Yisrael. They're not something which is edible by Jews. So the imhevi like Kiddush, and now the Braise says if a person did bring these things, then they would not be Kiddush. So now, according to this version, Amar Rabbi, Tamer Amasi, loy Kiddush likra of a Kiddush liposel. It means he also would mean that it's not Kiddush as far as that you can actually offer these menachas or mesachim or whatever, but it would be Kiddush as far as becoming posel in the sense that, in other words, if now a Tavulyon touched it or whatever else happened to it that would make it posel, it would become posel and you can't be Kiddush and you would have to burn it. We're talking about clay shoddis being Makadish things or not, and under what circumstances they're Makadish, and we also mentioned in the Mishnah that you have the case where clay shoddis gets a hold in it and what the din is. So let's talk about that. Tonaban, clay kodesh shemin. If the kalim of kodesh, if the clay shoddis got a, if a clay shoddis got a hold in it, ein matichin son, we do not melt around the, we do not melt or solder around the hole in order to close up the hole. So you don't do that. The in matichin l'seichan aver, you also don't solder them by melting lead or some other metal and dripping it into the hole over there to close it up. The idea is because we say Ein Anius B'Makom Ashiros. The Beis Hamikdash is the site of the ultimate riches because everything in the world belongs to Hashem. So Rashi says actually Mechzik Anius. It looks like poverty. A poor person would do that. A poor person has a keli with a hole in it. He can't afford to buy a new one, so he would fix it by doing that by putting more metal on into the hole or by melting the metal around the hole itself and closing it up. But in the Beis Hamikdash, it's not appropriate to do that. So in Anius Makom Ashiros, basically, is the idea that the Beis Hamikdash is the place of the ultimate riches, because as the pasuk says, Liyah Kesef, Liyah Zav, Nuam Hashem Tzvachos, all the gold and silver in the world belong to Hashem, and therefore in the Beis Hamikdash it's not an appropriate place to be acting like we're poor and we can't afford new kalim instead of fixing the old ones. There is an interesting point, by the way. Here we're using the principle of Ein Anius Mokum Ashirus. There are other places in Shas where it uses almost the opposite principle, that Torah Chosam Amonim Shal Yisrael, that Torah is concerned about Jewish money, and we don't want to waste it unnecessarily. So when do we apply one and when do we apply the other? So the Nodeb Yehuda had a Talmud who was a Rebbe Eliezer Flephelus, his name was. Later on, the late Rebbe Lozer, actually. Just later on, Mr. Rebbe Lozer became the Rav of Prague after Nodeb Yehuda. But anyway, so he writes in his own Shuvas called Shuvah Me'ava, he posed the question to his Rebbe, the Nodeb Yehuda, what's the rule over here? When do we say Ein Anius Mokum Ashirus? And when do we say Torah Chosam Amonim Shal Yisrael? And the Nodeb Yehuda replies to him with a Shuvah, analyzing the whole thing in great detail, and saying basically the difference is whether we're talking about klei shoris and whether we're talking about something that has kedushas aguf. So when you have those factors involved, then we say ein anius mokum ashirus, and we don't care how much it costs. In other cases, we would say we would not say that, and instead we would say a Torah chosam amon shoyzer. The Torah is concerned about Jewish money, and we don't want to waste it unnecessarily. Achronim talk about that doesn't really explain all the possibilities, and there are in fact Mephoshim who explain that it's really just the Chachamim in each case. The Chachamim determine on a case-by-case basis which one is appropriate. Here the Chachamim determine that this kind of thing, to fix the Kalim by soldering them or whatever, is not appropriate, and it's not the covered dick for the Beis HaMikdash, and it looks like you're poor. So therefore, so you don't do that. The Mishnah continues, the Braisa continues, Niftmu, if a Kli Shoris is blemished or dented, so the same thing, in Masakdenos, and we don't fix them. Instead, what we do in all these cases that Amnon explains is we take the metal, we melt it down, and we make a new Kali for it. The Kedusha still remains on the metal. So we can't just go and start using it for something else, because this metal was used for a Kli Shoris, but what we do is we melt it down and we fashion a whole new Kali from scratch. Similarly, continues the Braisa, Sakin Shenifkam, if a knife for Shchita, if it was nicked, in Mashchitin es Pagimasa, then you don't sharpen it in order to remove the nick. It actually points out that would be where it's a big nick. If it's a tiny little nick, then sure, you can. So in other words, the point is, the difference is, after you sharpen it, would the repair be noticeable? If it's not, if it's just a tiny nick, and when you sharpen it, you'll never know that it was that way, then it's not a problem. But when it's a large nick or a large dent, and even after you fix it, it'll be noticeable, then we're saying you don't do that. Nishrita, and similarly, if the blade comes loose from the handle, ein machzirin oisa, you don't put it back. You don't again, because ein anias mokum ashiros. So instead, what you do is you make a new knife. The Braisa continues. Abba Sholem, Sakin Matrefes Hoisim Amikdash. There was one time a knife in the Bis Mikdash that was regularly making the Korbanos Tref. Rashi explains it was made out of in such a way that it was very easily nicked. So it was constantly getting tiny nicks in it, and the result is that then you shech kodshim with it, and they become treif because the shchita was possible. Keep in mind, by the way, we'll learn in Chulin when we get to Eves Hashem, that after you shech, you have to check the knife, because there's always a possibility that while you were shechting yourself, the knife became nicked, for example, by cutting, even just, let's say you might have became nicked while you're cutting through the skin before you got to the simonim, and then by the time you got to the simonim, it was a nicked knife, and it would be possible. So for Pashtos, we're not talking about over here, they would go and shech it knowing that it had a nick, but they'd shech with it, they'd check it afterwards, find that there was a nick, and then they have a suffix, was this korban that we just shechted possible or not? So the Kohenim voted about it, the Gamzua, and they put it in Gniz. Yeah, and on the side of the Bais Mikdash, you had the Beis HaChalifos, where they would place the knives that had become possible. So here they decided this knife can't be used anymore, and we have to put it in because it's too much of a risk of possible in the Korbanos, and therefore they hid it away. It's interesting that this Nimnu allowed, they should have to vote on it. You would think that just you just do it and have done with it. Apparently, the idea is the clay shoris have kedusha to them. You can't just get rid of them unnecessarily, and therefore they actually had to sit down and vote about it, whether we should do that or whether we have any other alternative. Now let's talk about the big day kahuna. The big kahuna, you have a similar kind of thing. The same way as kalim can get holes or nicks or things like that, the same way the big day kahuna can become dirty. So let's talk about that. We learn in another braisa. Bigvei kohuna ein oisin oisa meisim machat. The bigvei kohuna, you do not make them by needlework. Ela meisim oreg, but rather by weaver's work. Meaning, in other words, many times, think of the clothes that you wear on a day-to-day basis. They're not made out of one, most of them are not made out of one piece of cloth. There are a few pieces where they're fitted and sewn together. With the bigger kahuna, you don't do that. To begin with, the beged is woven in the ground. Shenema Masse Oder, because the pasuk says Masse Oder. So you take food. Now there are some parts of them that were attached with stitches. For example, you have the ksoinus, the long shirt that the Kohenim wore. So there the sleeves were sewn on separately. Another example is the ephod, the shoulder straps of it were sewn on separately. Those it specifically says so. But other than that, for example, the body of the ksoinus or the other things had to be, and then with the sayim and things like that, had to be lachatzila woven in the round. You think of like it's a, you know, similar to, for example, you have, let's say, for example, stockings nowadays are often woven that way. You have they're woven in the round. They have special machines for it. So then they had to do the same kind of thing. Misgalu continued the price. If the big kohuna became dirty, you don't wash them with neser or ohol, which are various types of detergents that they used in those days. So again, the idea would be because ein anius machmashiros. So rather, what you would do is you would put them away. They'd eventually tear them up into strips and use them for wicks for the menorah and make new ones. And the Chofetz Chaim points out in Lekutei Halachos and Zevach Todah, he says, come on, you're not going to say, so what, every single time a tiny little drop of blood falls on them, you're going to do that? It would be impossible. So he says, no, if it's a small little thing where afterwards, when it's washed, it won't be noticeable, then there's no problem washing it. We're talking about over here where it got a larger stain on it. And again, like we said before, with the nicks in the kaling, where even after you wash it or repair it or whatever, it's still going to be noticeable. That's when we're saying that you don't do that anymore. Then you put away that set of big zikorna. So the Gemara says, what do you mean you don't use neser or ohol? Haba mayim machabsin? Does that mean that you're allowed to wash them with water? If the point is mechsikanius, if you don't use detergent, they're certainly not going to come out clean. So what's the implication that you could wash them in water? And that's not a problem, but you can't wash them with detergent. Why? If anything, that's more anius that a poor person can't afford detergent. Rabbi says, right, the Braisa is not talking about as far as what detergents you can use or what cleaning agents you can use. It means hubu b'mayim. If they became dirty only to the extent where they need water. So similar to what the Chofetz Chaim is saying about a small stain, but in other words, doesn't really matter the size of it so much, but if it's a very superficial type of stain and water is enough to remove it, so then fine, machabsin oisan v'neser v'ohol. Then you can clean it. Not only using water, you can even use neser or ohol, because then they're not really considered dirty in the first place. But if it gets to the point, it's so dirty that with ordinary clothing you would need neser or ohol to clean it, then after mayim ein mechabsin. Then you don't wash it even with water. So in other words, the factor is not what detergents or what cleaning agents you can use. The factor is how dirty did it get. So the water versus neser or ohol doesn't define what you can use to clean it. It defines how dirty was it in the first place. The yesh omim and mechabsin oisin kolikar, yesh omim, that you don't wash the big kahuna at all, even if they're only a little dirty. She'ein anias makom hashiros, because again, you don't act in a poor way in the way of riches. So even if it's a small stain, so again, as the Chofetz Chaim says, you know, if it's a tiny little thing, one drop of blood fell on it, it would be impossible to avoid that. So then even the Yesh Omen would agree that you can wash it. But we're talking about the Yesh Omen are saying that where we had said it, where we explained the Tanakhama to be saying that if it became only a little bit dirty and water is enough to clean it, then you can use water, or you could even use Nessar Ohol. So the Yesh Omen would say that no. But if it's a tiny little stain, even the Yesh Omen would seem to agree that would be fine. Okay. Let's talk more about the big zikorna. Tana Rabbanan. Me'il pulei shel tchela soya. The me'il, which is one of the extra begodim that the Kohen Gadol wore, pulei shel tchela soya. It was made entirely out of tchela's wool. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Vayasas me'ilay for klul tchelas." He made the me'il of the ephod out of completely tchelas. It's called the me'il ha'ephod because it went underneath the ephod. The order was that the Kohen, the regular Kohen would wear a ksoinus, a long shirt that covered them from neck until, from, 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 uh, that covered them from neck till ankles, earlier in the Masechta, that has to exactly reach their ankles, and has to exactly reach the floor, and it has to be sized to them exactly, and then it had sleeves that went down to their wrists. Other than that, the regular Kohenim wore underneath that, they wore mechnasayim, which is breeches or pants. They wore an avnet, which is a belt, and they wore mikvas, which is a hat or a cap. They would take a strip of linen and wind it around their head in the form of a turban. The Kohen Gadol had four more begadim. Among them, as he had the me'il, so over the ksonis, he would wear the me'il, which we're saying over here was made out of pure tchelus, and then over that he would put the ephod with the choshen attached to it. So therefore, the me'il is called me'il ha'ephod. The Braisa continues, Shulav Ketzad, how do they make the hems of the Me'il? The Pasuk tells us that the Me'il had on the bottom of it pomegranates and bells. So how do they do that? Maybe Tchelas Vargomon, say last 20 Shazurin, they would take Tchelas, blue wool, Vargomon, purple dyed wool, Tchelas Shani, red dyed, red, crimson dyed wool, Shazurin, all of them are spun together. The Gemara in Yoma tells us that of each of these colors, they would have eight plies of each of these three colors, and then they spin them all together, so they have a 24 ply thread made of these three colors. But they shape them into a shape of pomegranates whose mouths have not opened yet. So Rashi points out that when a pomegranate grows on a tree, then it's closed up. So you have the crown on top, but it's closed up. Eventually, then when the pomegranate becomes ripe, then it starts opening up naturally. So now they made the pomegranate-shaped things on the bottom of the me'il. They made them like unripe pomegranates where the mouths have not opened up yet. Another way you could compare them is they're like the button-shaped things that they make on that children make on top of their helmets. So Rashi describes that kids would make for play fighting, they would make helmets for themselves out of woven together branches, and then they would put a little thing on the top, a button-shaped thing, and the shape of the rimonim on the me'il was similar to that as well. So they take the 24 ply thread of these three colors and make these shaped things out of them. And then they would hang them along the hem of the me'il. And then alternating with them would be bells. There's actually on the Pasuk explained that they alternated. The Pasuk says Pam and Ridimen, that they had a bell pomegranate. So Rashi on the Pasuk explains that actually what it was is that you had exactly that. You had one of these pomegranate decorations, next to it a bell, next to it another pomegranate, next to it another bell, and so forth along the whole hem of the meal on both sides. The Ramban actually disagrees with Rashi on that and says in that case, then what function are the pomegranates serving? The Rashi explains the pomegranates are hollow, but in that case, the Ramban says that in that case, why make them like pomegranates? Why not make them like apples? They might as well be filled in. Why should they be hollow? But rather, the Ramban explains that actually the bells were inside the pomegranates. There's a sicha, an interesting sicha, where the Rebbe talks about, the deeper explanation of this machlokas. An apple that Ramban is proposing that they should have them shaped like apples. Apples represent the Jewish people when we're on a high ruchnistic level. Because apua fa'atzei ayar, as the Pasuk compares the Jewish people to an apple tree in the forest. On the other hand, when we're not acting so much as we should, then we're compared to pomegranates, that even the emptiest Jews are full of mitzvahs like a pomegranate. So therefore, so Rashi is taking the view that they can be like pomegranates, either hollow, that's fine. The Ramban, on the other hand, argues that if they're like that, then they might as well be like apples, meaning in other words, the whole point is, we're talking about the Kohen Gadol, bringing them into the Kodesh when he does the Avodah. So if that's the purpose of the bells in particular is that they should clang when he's walking and announcing his entrance. So and he's coming by with a shlichus of the whole Jewish people. So therefore, so now in particular, the bells then represent the avodah of the Baal Teshuvah.
because the Baal Teshuva's avodah is very noisy in the sense that he has, in a sense, a person who was frum from birth, like his avodah is more compliant a lot of times because, you know, it's a natural thing to him. For Baal Teshuva, it's anything but natural, so therefore, so it's more noisy. So the bells represent then the bells represent the avodah of the Baal Teshuva. And now Rashi says then that the Rimonim are meant to represent that even the emptiest Jews still go in with the Kohen Gadol, as opposed to the Ramban holds that never mind that. You don't even have to compare them to pomegranates. You can compare even the seemingly emptiest Jew is really an apple and is full of Torah and mitzvahs. So that's as far as the pomegranates. Continue the braisa. Or maybe shivim u'shnayim zagin. Then he brings 72 bells to the shivim u'shnayim in Berlin, which those bells have 72 clappers. Each bell has a clapper. The total of the hand, and he hangs the bells on the pomegranates along the hems of the meal. Shloshim v'shishim etzad zeh, or shloshim v'shishim etzad zeh. 36 on one side, 36 on the other side. So altogether it was 72. Reb Gosa said the name of Yehuda. No, there were altogether 36. Shloshim v'shishahoyu, not 72 altogether. 36 altogether. Shmona esrim etzadzeh, or shmona esrim etzadzeh. 18 on one side of the meal, and 18 on the other. The meal, by the way, was shaped basically like an oversized tallow pot. It was shaped like it hung in front of the Kohen Gadol. On the back, it didn't have sides. It was basically a large rectangular piece of fabric with a hole for the head in the middle. So you have mitzadzen, mitzadzen, this side and on that side, meaning on the front and back heads. So again, the Tanakhama is saying that you had 18, that you had 36 of the bells on each of those two ends, and Reb Gosa is saying that you had 18. So altogether, was it 72 according to the Tanakhama, or 36 total according to the Judges? So the Gemara says, "Omer of Eni Nivar Sosen to Machlokas Chan Kach Machlokas Maris Negoyim." You know, the same Machlokas over here, 36 versus 72. You have a similar Machlokas as far as how many different types of Tzaras are there. Now, we learned way back in Masechta Shavuos that, you know, we said that they're basically Shayim Shein Arba. There are four basic types of Saras, because you have Se'es, and you have Se'es and Baheres, which are the two primary types, and each of them has a secondary type called Sakakas. So you have that, but on the other hand, you also have, there's a lot of sub-things within that. The Mishnah goes on to describe over there. You have cases of Saras, we have a little red and skin of white. You have Saras on the head. You have Saras on the scalp. You have Saras on the beard. You have Saras on a scar from a burn, and so on and so forth. So when you count all of that, Maris Negoyim, Reb Dosa ben Helkina, on the Lamed Vav, Reb Dosa ben Helkina says that there were 36, which matches what Reb Dosa had just said about the 36 bells on the Me'il total. Akabim and Malal, Meshivim Ushnaim, and Akabim and Malal says altogether, when you consider all the different types of Saras, including also Saras of clothing and of houses, and all that, and the different possible colors that they can be, and so on and so forth. So then you have altogether, Akabim and Malal says 72, which is like 72 bells that you have over here according to the Tanakhama. The connection between them, Tosfos points out, is the Gemara is going to say now that the Me'il is Mechaper for Lashon Hara. So Sarah also comes from Lashon Hara. That's the connection that the number of bells is going to be equal to the number of types of Sarah that exists. So here we're actually going to start talking about that point, about the big dekohuna being mechaper for various averis, one of them the me'il being mechaper for lashon hara. The Gemara actually points out in Eruvin, so wait a minute, if it's mechaper for lashon hara, and each of these other things is mechaper for something else, so why, for example, we say over there that negoyim, that saras, comes from lashon hara, why, if you have a kapara over here? So the Gemara there in Eruvin points out that, first of all, the Gemara in Erchin there points out that there's a difference whether what he did was effective, like if he says Lashon Hara actually had an effect or not. If it had an effect, then he'll get Saras. If not, then the Big Dekohuna can mean Mechaper for him. Tosfos has a somewhat different understanding over there, that effective can mean what he did actual Lashon Hara versus what he did, like Avak Lashon Hara. Tosfos also discusses over here in some detail that when we talk about, when we're going to say now that the Big Dekohuna are Mechaper for different Averis, what it really means is not Mechaper for the individual. What it's Mechaper for is it's Mechaper for the Jewish people collectively. But now the Gemara over there in Hirchin is bothered by the fact that Lashon Hara, the Jewish people, aren't collectively going to be punished for one individual's Lashon Hara, and therefore why, and therefore we have to ask why he needs Saras, and then the Gemara makes that distinction between whether it was effective or not. So the Gemara says, "V'omer of Einani Bar Sosin, Loman Nismacha Parshas Korbanos, the Parshas Bigdif Lahun. Why is the Parsha of Korbanos close next to the Parsha of Bigdif Lahun?" Rashi explains in Parshas Tzad, you have, after it finishes talking about the Korbanos, you have a pasuk that summarizes, Zoisa Torah La'ol Olamim from Lachakas La'otam La'amirul Mozavah Hashemim, and then the next thing. And then the next thing after that is that Hashem tells Moshe to take Aaron and his sons and take them and dress them in the Bigdei Kohuna and start inaugurating them into the Avodah. So now, so the question would be why those two things are placed together. Marsha points out that actually, why that's a question. Why is that such a question? After talking about the Korbanos, the next natural thing is that you need to talk about that now it's time to inaugurate the Kohen. So rather, Marsha points out a different place in the place. So Rashi himself explains in Erechin a different explanation that what it means is in Parashat Tzaveh, where it discusses the other way around, it discusses the Bigdei Kohuna, and then it starts talking about the Korbanos for the Miluim. So that's another way of looking at why do those two things go to back to back. And in that case, then it would be the Nisbah really would be the other way around. Then why is it talking about the Bigdei Kohuna, and then immediately after that talking about the Korbanos? Anyway, so why do these two things go together? Loim Aloch tells you, Ma Korbanos Machafrin, at Bigdei Kohuna Machafrin. Just like the Korbanos are Machafir for various things, so also is Bigdei Kohuna are Machafir. So let's go through one by one and see what each of the Bigdei Kohuna is Machafir for. Ksonis Machafiris al Shvichus Dam. The Ksonis, the fact that the Kohanim wear a Ksonis is Machafir again, not on an individual level, as the Tosfos says, and on a collective level, on a Jewish people level, for Shvichus Dam, for bloodshed, for Shvichus Dam, for bloodshed. Shenema, the pasuk says in this week's parasha, when after they sold Yosef, Yushchatu Siriyazim, they shefted a goat, and they dipped Yosef's psoenis in the blood in order to pretend that he had been eaten by a wild animal. But in other words, we see that Vayitbalu Esakutoinus, we can darshan also that it means that there's tevila, there's cleanliness accomplished by, there's cleanliness of for blood accomplished by the psoenis. So that hints at the idea that the psoenis is mechaper for Shvichus Damim. Marsha points out another point as well. The ksonis is a long shirt, more like an undershirt, that's worn directly on the body. If a person is killed, Rahman al-Tlan, their blood, which of their clothing is going to be most stained by the blood, is going to be the ksonis. So that's another reason why the ksonis is machapa for shvichus damin. Michnasayim machapin al gilui arayis, the michnasayim, the pants, the breeches that the Kohanim wore, are machapa for gilui arayis. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Vaaselahem michnaseivod, make for them breeches of linen, lachasas besar erva, to cover the flesh of their erva." So the simple sense is exactly that, the breeches are meant to cover the erva area of their bala. But we also darshan from it that it means that they're covering over a matter of erva. So the mechapa for gilui arayis. Besides the point that Tosfos says over here, that it's as long as that we're talking on a collective level, not an individual level, the individual person still needs a kapara. In addition, there's also all these things we're talking about. That's when the mechapa means together with tshuva. Otherwise, you have to ask. I mean, eventually, for example, the Jewish people did in the first Mishnah, but Izara and gilui arayis, shvichus damim, all of which are mentioned over here, and those four the gadolus. How would that be? Kohanim are still away from Bigdei Kohuna. Is because it requires tshuva as well. So the mechnasayim are mechaper for that. Mitznefes mechaperes on gasi aruach. The mitznefes, the turban that the kohenim would wear, is mechaper for gasi aruach, for pride. Why is that? Minayin, where do we get that from? Amar Chanina, yover shabagoyva, but yichaper al goyva. Because the thing that's worn at the height of the body, the mitznefes is worn, or the mikbas is worn as high up as possible on the body, on top of the head, is mechaper for the goyva, for something high up, where a person thinks himself to be a high up, to be a bar gaiva. Marsha points out also, you know, you have the famous story in Shabbos with Rav Nachman Yitzchak, where his mother had him wear a yarmulke even from the youngest age, because otherwise he's going to grow up to be a ganav, because of the way he developed Yiras Shamayim. So in the same way, then the mikbas, the turban of the Kohen, helps him have a sense of Yiras Shamayim, which is the opposite of gaiva, which is the opposite of goy, which is the opposite of gasas aruach. Next, Avnet Mechaper al Hiralev, the Avnet, the belt, is Mechaper for things that that people think wrongly in their hearts, thoughts of Avera. Why Hefer they say? Because the Avnet, that's where on the body it's located. As we learned through the Yonah Sefer, the Avnet is worn at the level of the Kohen's elbows and directly over his heart, so therefore it's Mechaper what he thinks with his heart. Choshen Mechaper al Adinim. That covers the four begadim of the regular kohen. Now the chosh. Now we turn to the special things of the kohen gadol. The chosh and mechaper for aladinim for justice for when people when based in paskin a case wrongly. Shenem of asis a chosh and mishpat. As the pasuk says, you should make a chosh of judgment, implying that the chosh and mechaper for judgment. And the Marsha adds that the pasuk describes the Nasa Aaronis Mishpat Bnei Yisrael al Libay. Aaron will carry the judgment of the Jewish people on his heart, meaning that the Choshen on his heart is Mechaper for the justice that they did wrongly. Ephod Mechaper al Avodas Kachavim. The Ephod is Mechaper for Avodah Zarah. The Ephod is like a large apron-like beged that the Kohen Gadol wore. So that is Mechaper for Avodah Zarah. Shenema ein Ephod of Sirachim. As the pasuk says, there is no ephod and terafim. The context of the pasuk is talking about that the Navi is saying there's going to come a point, you Jewish people, you won't have a Beis Mikdash, you won't have an ephod, for example, to seek closeness to Hashem through that, but lahavdil, you won't have terafim, you won't have Avodah Zarah either, and you'll serve Hashem properly in Golos and Bizocha to the building of the Beis Mikdash and the big corner again. But then because the pasuk phrases like that, ein ephod, it was terafim, you can also see a second meaning. Yeah. It means in Ephod, when there is no Ephod, or Srafim, then there's an Avera of Trafim of Avodah Zarah, and there's no way to get rid of it. You find that when there's an Ephod, and it's Mechaper from Trafim. Me'il Mechaper al Lashon Hara Minayin, then the Me'il is Mechaper al Lashon Hara, where do we know that from? Amar Chanina, Yavai Dabar Shabakoil, because something that has a noise here, namely, as we said, the Me'il has the bells on the bottom of it that are constantly tinkling and clanging as the Kohen Gadol walks, Mechaper al Koil, and it should be Mechaper for an Avera involving a voice. Next. Let it atone for the bad voice, for the bad sound of Lashon Hara. Next, the tzitz mechaper al azus ponim, the tzitz, the forehead plate that the Kohen Gadol wore, is mechaper for azus ponim, for brazenness. Why? The tzitz tziv b'hoya al meitzach Aaron, because by the tzitz it says it should be on the forehead of Aaron, over azus ponim tziv, or meitzach, isha zona, hoya lach, azus ponim, brazenness is described with the phrase that you had the forehead of an isha zona who usually is brazen. So we see, in other words, that brazenness is associated with the forehead. Primarily, it's mechaper, you know, the masechta, that's mechaper for certain problems involving the kodshim. The kodshim became tomid, and it sits with the evidence mechaper for that, but since it's also placed on the Kohen Gadol's forehead, so it's also mechaper, so we're saying that it's also mechaper for this azus ponim.
My mother
asks Ain, is that so? So you're telling me, Rabbein and Ivar Sosa, you're going through eight averas, and you're saying the big corner on the half, each of the eight bigger corner on the chaper for another one of those. But for Amr Rabbi Shurban Levi, Shnei Dvarim Lamassin Lahan Kapara Bakarbanis, Rabbi Shurban Levi points out there are two major averas where we don't find a kapara with korbanos. Many averas we find. A person breaks Shabbos, for sure he brings a chatas. Person worships Avodah Zarah, also he brings a chatas. Person swears falsely, then he brings a korban or the yerid, and so forth. Many averas, yeah, most averas, you have a kapara with korbanos. But you have two things where not. Umatsinulahan kapara b'makamacher, but Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says we find a different place where you do have a kapara for them. The Elohim, shpichus domim v'loshen hara. Shvichus Damim Me'egla Arufa. What happens for Shvichus Damim? There's no korban that's brought for Shvichus Damim. Instead, what's Mechaper for it? Be'egla Arufa. Then the Lashon Hara, there's no korban for that either, but you have, we find that Lashon Hara is atoned for by the Keturis. How do we know that? Tony of Hanania, Minayim Keturis from Mechaperis. How do we know that Keturis is atoned for Lashon Hara? To Nehemiah, as we find Parshas Korach, we find the Jewish people were complaining and saying that you caused Jews to die and in the whole affair of Korach, and then a plague broke out, and the pasuk is Vayitin Esak Torah, that Aaron offered Torah, Vayichaper Alam, and he was Mechaper for the people. So why is that? Well, what is the connection? The Tony Dreid Abishmal, Al Mak Torah Mechaperes, what is Torah atone for? Al Lashon Hara. because Yovah, Yovah Shabbat Hashai, because something that's brought in secret, Torah generally brought in secret, the Sapra, by Hashai, and it will atone for something that is done in secret. Lashon Hara is usually said in secret. People don't usually stand in public and say Lashon Hara. They usually do it in private, where they can character assassinate the other person. With Torah, so it points out that when the Kohenim are bringing Ketoros every day, everybody has to stay out of the Heichel and of the area between the Ulam and the Mizbeach. And when the Kohen Gadol is bringing Ketoros on Yom Kippur, then everybody has to stay out of the Kodesh and the Kodesh of the Kodesh. So we see, therefore, that Ketoros is connected with Lashon Hara. When it comes to, by the way, when the people were saying, after Mamitim as Amasem, that was not in private, that was in public. However, one of the first writers of the Sfas Emes points out the fact still remains, though, that they weren't, when the Pasuk says, they said, after Mamutim as Hashem, we cause Jews to die, they're not necessarily openly accusing Moshe and Aaron with those words, but they're saying things from where there's an innuendo that they inappropriately caused Korach and company's death. So therefore, it can still be considered, Dabash Shabbatai, sense, even though it is being done in public, they're not openly saying Moshen Hara in public. So anyway, the point is that Torah is also being done in private. So the point is, we see that Shvichos Damim and Lashon Hara are miscapped with other things, not with Korbanos, but not with the Big Dipper Horn Eirim. So how is Rabbi Einan Bar Sultan listed known as the few of the eight things among the big that the Big Dipper Horn are miscapped for? So Kasha Lashon Hara, Lashon Hara, Kasha Shvichos Damim, Kasha Shvichos Damim. According to Rabbi Yehuda and Levi, you have the Igla Arufa and the Ketoros and the Chapa for those respectively. And according to Rabbi Yehuda Bar Sassan, it's the Ksonis and the Ne'il and the Ksonis respectively. So the answer is Loikasha. As far as Shvichos Domim, there's no contradiction. When you know who the killer was, then the Egla Arufa is not going to work. You don't bring an Egla Arufa if you know who the killer is. So then, in that case, the Big Dikahuna will be Mechaper at least for the Tzibri. The Yochid himself, of course, there's no Kapara for him unless he's actually caught by Deistin and executed. But the Tzibur, the fact that bloodshed was done, and that, as the Pasuk says, in Parashas Maaseh, that pollutes Eretz Yisrael, and everybody has a certain degree of guilt for it, so then the Big Dikahuna are Mechaper for that. So the Gemara asks, wait a minute, what do you mean? If you know who killed and then you're not bringing Egla Arufa, Bauk Tolahu, then he himself has to be executed. And if they don't execute him, then everybody is responsible. So what's the Ksonis being Mechaper for? As far as the Retzeach himself, the Gemara mentions in Erechin over there that he himself will be punished with Tzara'as. So what's going on over here? The answer is Mezid that I asked today. It can be where he killed the Mezid, but there was no Hasra. So the Tzibur cannot execute him. However, there is still a responsibility on them for the fact that a murder happened in Bechlal, and for them, therefore, the Ksonis is Mechaper for that. Meanwhile, the Retzeach himself, he's not going to have his Kapara, Mrs. Bastin, because there was no Hasra. Instead, he'll get Negoyim, he'll get Saras. And Lashon Hara, Nami like Kasha, as far as the two cases of Lashon Hara, there's also not a contradiction. Hobbit Sinner, Hobbit Pahesu. It depends whether Lashon Hara was being said in secret, but they showed later. The fact he's talking about the case. Where a person says Lashon Hara in secret, and then we're saying that the Ketoros is Machapa for that, just like the Ketoros is brought in secret and in privacy. Public Pahesia, as opposed to the Bar Sassan, is talking about where the Lashon Hara was said very openly, and then saying that then the Ketoros is not an appropriate thing for that. Instead, what we have is the noisy bells of the Ne'il are Mechaper for that instead.